Impact Leaders, the podcast on leaders focusing on impact investment and performance with purpose, supporting the companies that are solving the world's biggest challenges. Impact Leaders is brought to you by Fast Forward 2030 and Real Changers. Visit fastforward2030.com to learn how to include the global goals into your business models, and realchangers.com to find talent and careers with impact. And this is your host, JP Dahlman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Impact Leaders. In today's episode of Impact Leaders, we have Dr. Patrick Shorlett as our guest. Hello, Patrick.
Hi, JP. Great pleasure being here.
Thank you so much for being with us today. And also thank you to the team at Camarco PR for hosting us in their offices here in the City of London. We're very grateful. I'm very honored to have you with us. As it is our custom, I'll read a little bit of an introduction, a short bio about you for our listeners' benefits. So Dr. Patrick Shorlett is the Chief Executive Officer of Blue Orchard Impact Investment Managers. Prior to that, he held the position of Chief Operating Officer at the company for 3 years. Patrick joined Blue Orchard from Bank Vontobel, where he was in charge of corporate business development and key strategic initiatives. He also held the position of Business Project Manager at Credit Suisse, following various assignments as financial analyst and portfolio manager with major Swiss asset management companies.
Summarizes very well. Yeah. I started off a few years in academia, published a few books as well. So also have a bit of a research background, so to speak.
Oh, fantastic. In which area was that?
It was all finance, mostly asset pricing. So how do you determine the price of a share, a bond, real estate, etc.? And it was fairly quantitative work, mostly so-called multi-factor models. Uh-huh. And I think one thing that is related to that research is the smart beta strategies that you find today. So my work went a bit in that direction.
Fantastic. And then I wanted to just double check, how long have you been the CEO at Watcher right now?
Almost 4 years now.
4 years. As it is our tradition, we always start with the same first question, which is, what is impact investing, Patrick?
So there's a slew of definitions out there, depending on the organization. I try to keep it very simple. For me, it's really merging the best of two worlds. On the one hand side, you have the financial features and financial returns. And on the other side, you have things that you find more maybe traditionally in charity, like reduction of poverty, fighting climate change, improving quality and affordability of education. And impact investing is really combining the two. So with achieving a social or environmental goal through the means of investments.
Excellent. I'll mention, I'm sure we're going to cover parts of, you know, how you go about doing all of these. And that is the part where I want to tell people a little bit more about your company in case, you know, they haven't read about all the news on the press during the past months. But Blue Orchard, and I recommend everyone to go to blueorchard.com to learn everything about it. It is one of the leading kind of global impact investment managers. As a pioneering an impact investor, they are dedicated to fostering inclusive and climate smart growth in emerging and frontier markets while providing attractive returns for investors, which is what you were mentioning about. This headquartered in Switzerland, and they have approximately $3.5 billion of assets under management as of the 30th of May of 2019. Sorry about that. Blue Orchard, however, has invested to date over $6 billion across more than 80 countries. 200 million people with low income in emerging and frontier markets receive access to financial and related services with the support of Blue Orchard as of December last year, 2018. And it's an interesting fact, which is Blue Orchard was founded in 2001 by an initiative of the UN as the first commercial manager of microfinance debt investments worldwide. And I mentioned now as well, we'll talk about it a little bit more. Last point is that in July 2019, it was announced that the company became part of Schroders Group, which acquired a majority stake in this leading impact investor. Is that a
perfect summary? Couldn't have done better.
Perfect. I would love to learn more about, you know, different areas, and I'll ask you about different parts. But is there anything else that you want to share on the general about Blue Orchard?
Yeah, I think at the heart of Blue Orchard is really combining attractive financial returns with achieving an impact. And you mentioned Blue Orchard was initiated by the United Nations almost 20 years ago as the manager of the first ever commercial microfinance fund. And that was at that time in the context of the so-called Millennium Development Goals, before the Sustainable Development Goals. And the key goal of the Millennium Development Goals was to reduce extreme poverty by 50% by 2015. And a very ambitious goal, but it was a bit the question mark of how to achieve that. And Kofi Annan's team at that time, they identified microfinance as one of the potentially effective instruments. And so they started bringing the people together who eventually founded Blue Orchard to manage this this first ever commercial microfinance fund. And the fund is still up and running for 20 years now. Today,
it's a bit only more 20 years in a way, right?
It's amazing. And today, the fund is a bit more than $2.3 billion. So micro is not so micro anymore. And I believe it has really proven its case, and that achieving a social goal and achieving attractive financial returns is really not a trade-off. It goes hand in hand.
And it's interesting the part of the story history of it. You know, it's like kind of Kofi Annan with his vision back then, which then turned into the SDGs. Yeah. I know a lot of people also know about that. But again, if we don't mind, just to go perhaps even more basic, because, you know, people may not know, what is microfinance?
So, again, microfinance is providing small-scale financial services to people living in developing countries, low-income households, vulnerable people, to help them establishing a business, growing their business, and in the end find their own way out of poverty, improve their livelihoods. And the financial services can be microcredit, so small-scale credits can be $50, maybe up until $5,000, which is already a bigger microcredit, but they also provide a deposit. So once people make some money, they also need a safe place to store it, which is not a given in developing countries, so that's also a service. But then there is also educational services that are provided, mini MBAs, financial literacy, literacy courses that go along, because in the end what is important in microfinance is that the micro entrepreneurs, they succeed and they really improve their livelihoods. How it works in more general terms as an investment is that investors they invest in an investment fund. Blue Orchard in that example manages the investment fund. The investment fund provides a loan to a so-called microfinance institution, and the microfinance institution itself then on-lends the money to the micro entrepreneurs. And you mentioned the 200 million people that Blue Orchard reaches with the financing of our investors, and we reach 200 million people through the microfinance network that we work with. So it's not Blue Orchard itself who deals directly with 200 million people. For that, we would be a bit too small of a company, but it really goes through these microfinance institutions.
And we'll cover, I think, the structure because it's quite interesting. And then maybe I mentioned there that you it's kind of a, I don't know if the best word is a waterfall, but the structure goes in a way that you cover about 40, you have support already 44 million micro entrepreneurs. So then the ricochet or the domino effect is that you, you know, touch the 200 million souls, right? And I like, again, sometimes for context, because it becomes obvious to many people that are in the industry, but, you know, even people in the industry, we were just talking offline before, in financial services, do not know how this works, right? But in the areas that you cover, I think you go in different ways, right? So this domino effect goes through, you do credit, you do private equity, sustainable infrastructure, blended finance, right? So those are the four ways that you effectively distribute the funds, right?
Correct. So Blue Orchard started with microfinance, and microfinance is it's mostly a debt business. There is also some private equity opportunities, but typically financial institutions that lend money, they need more credit than they need equity. And over the years, of course, Blue Orchard evolved and developed, and from our traditional microfinance debt business, we expanded into private equity, into infrastructure, and what is a bit a cross-sectional topic is blended finance initiatives, which are basically initiatives where private investors have the opportunity to invest alongside a development bank and benefit from some additional risk reduction mitigation measures by the development banks. Development banks also provide so-called technical assistance capital. This is grant funding that we can use to work with our investees, the portfolio companies, on technical matters. This can be introducing a new product, this can be improving their processes, can also be feasibility studies, it can be education programs. So this is separate funding that we have available to increase our impact.
Okay, and that's with the kind of the public-private partnerships,
correct,
right? Fantastic. And then I'll take advantage and let me just quickly mention a couple of the ones that I picked up from the website, right? So you have the Insu Resilience Investment Fund. These are the mandates, the blended finance mandates. The Japan ASEAN Women Empowerment Fund, the Microfinance Enhancement Facility, Microfinance Initiative for Asia, and Regional Education Finance Fund for Africa. So those are a couple.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And then I'll take advantage as well and mention that within the reach and the impact that you're having, 58% of it are women as well. So, which is very worth note mentioning. And then what I thought I'll also do, if that's okay, I'll just share a couple of the numbers in terms of what you seek in the different areas. I think it mentions here that you have you provide the financing to more than 180 financial institutions in over 50 emerging markets covering Africa, LATAM, Central and Eastern Europe and Asia. So if any of the effectively financial institutions in these areas do not know about you, they should come and talk to you, right? Because effectively you are funding them and backing them on the credit side, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
On the private equity side, it says that you typically invest between 3 million and 15 million in equity capital, serving mid-sized companies in this kind of underserved by international investors, which again, this is what we were talking about before, just people do not know about this sometimes, and we need to for everyone to be sharing that this is available. And then the sustainable infrastructure, obviously you do kind of sustainable and let's call it green investments, and they range between 5 million and 50 million in debt or equity for up to 10 years. So that's my marketing speech for
thanks JP.
I like it because again this is by all means this is all on the website, but sometimes it's the obvious is not so obvious, right? And this and I like numbers, and it makes it a lot easier for people to understand who can come and talk to you. I wanted to also ask you about kind of your impact themes, because you have very clear impact themes that you focus on. Can you share more about that?
Yeah, with pleasure. So at the aggregate level, we have two, I would say, main themes that that we want to contribute, and one is financial inclusion, the other one is climate change. Financial inclusion itself can be, I think, broken down in several subtopics. Microfinance is certainly one topic, but it's also women empowerment. It's SME financing as well. It's education financing. So there's a lot of subtopics that can be summarized under financial inclusion. And with financial inclusion, what we eventually want to contribute to is reducing poverty and reducing inequality. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, we have the climate change topics. With climate change, there is also at least two subtopics, I would say. One is climate change mitigation, where you try to help reducing CO2 emissions and through that really fighting the climate change. But we, as the global population, we already have created quite some damage, and there is already climate change happening. And seeing that happen, it creates more natural disasters, more frequent disasters. The disasters are heavier, more severe than in the past. And unfortunately, people in developing countries are most exposed to climate change, and they have the least means to cope with climate change. And so climate adaptation is also a very important topic that we work on to help poor and vulnerable people to adapt to the effects of climate change. And this can be through climate insurance. It can also be through infrastructure projects on the ground. But in our view, it's really important to contribute to both adaptation as well as mitigation.
So this is very interesting. And then just to kind of double check and reiterate this part about the education part, right? So again, this is no Blue Orchard directly doing it, but you operate with local companies that mm-hmm. then they will go and do all of these with this mandate and this kind of plan and objectives that you are pushing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely, and education is very close to my heart since I've been in academia for a while. So it's a very 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 important initiative to me personally as well. And how it works is exactly that we work again through intermediaries, and we use the same channel as on the microfinance side. So basically, we lend to microfinance institutions, and the microfinance institutions they on lend to education providers. And it's an Africa-focused initiative, and what's a bit special about Africa is that a large part of the African schooling system is private. The background of that is that the public education system is very often dysfunctional and does not provide the quality to the learners in the end that they effectively learn anything. And so even low-income households, they send their kids to a private school. And in Switzerland, private schools is more an elite thing. But in Africa, private schools is really for the broad population, including low-income households. Mm-hmm. And what we contribute is really to improve the affordability, the accessibility, the quality of the education that is provided through investments to help a school expand, buy new equipment, etc. But at the same time, it's again an initiative, a blended finance initiative with the German Development Bank, KfW, where we also have technical assistance capital available. And that technical assistance capital can then be deployed to help schools improve the curriculum, bring in experts who help them develop the learning materials, etc. So again, it's a very comprehensive package that we work with. We do not just invest and then kind of hands off, but we are really engaged almost on a day-to-day basis with these schools to improve the offering and the affordability.
Mm. And interesting, what you mentioned about kind of private school being, you know, for the masses, basically. And again, I'm not gonna say I'm an expert by any means on Africa matters, but it's interesting to see a documentary the other day about, I think it was related to other parts. It was sanitation in Nigeria, for example. And then I was trying to understand and learn because basically Nigeria in Lagos, they have like 22 million people, only 2 million can access water. Mm-hmm. And then they have like a sanitation project coming up, but only to cover about another 2 million people. And it always reminds me that, why I mentioned that, because it always reminds me that, you know, the institutions, the governments do not have the funding mm-hmm. to do the projects, infrastructure projects, the education. And that's where, you know, organizations like yours mm-hmm. and companies working with you can help with that, right? That's mm-hmm. kind of the
yeah. Absolutely, and it's basically the perfect examples of the education finance facility, because one of the KPIs when we work with schools, it's not only the pure curriculum or educational part, but it's also the education infrastructure. And so, for example, we look at and measure how many toilets are there for the kids. Mm-hmm. Are there separate toilets for boys and girls? Mm-hmm. Because in the end, hygiene is also very important. If kids are sick half yes. of the time and cannot attend school, then you can have the best learning materials, and it will not help anything. And so it really it needs a comprehensive approach to be successful, and sanitation facilities is an important part of that.
Yeah, it's huge, you know, and then always makes me realize how much more complex, you know, to deliver any of these projects is than mm-hmm. what people realize. And again, I think sanitation is a huge one for me that I had not really grasped, you know, yeah. what a benefit it is that we have in these, you know, more developed countries. Mm-hmm. And the majority of people, I think, is, I can't remember now, but I want to say out of the 7 billion, 8 billion, right? So mm-hmm. I think it's half, 50% or more actually do not have access to water and sanitation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is shocking. I wanted to just ask you a little bit more about kind of your clients, you know, or the kind of the investors that come mm-hmm. to you, and we're not going to talk too much about the details. Again, people can go and see in detail things on your website as they click the corresponding compliance approvals. But you have effectively, I think, is basically very simple, right? You have like three areas. So two funds, which is the Blue Orchard Microfinance Fund, the Blue Orchard SDG Impact Bond Fund, and then you have the Blended Finance Mandates, right? And is that basically the products that your investors can come and invest in?
Correct. Yeah. So it's different asset classes. It's different funds. I think the one we can mention is the UCITS fund, which we launched now almost two years ago. Okay. Invests in along the Sustainable Development Goals. So it's broader than just microfinance. It really addresses a broad set of the Sustainable Development Goals, and we do that by investing in liquid bonds. And that allows also retail investors to have access to an investment vehicle who comes in a UCITS framework, which is very well established. It's a Luxembourg fund. It's available in most European countries. And it was certainly also an innovation at that time. Took us a while to get the fund up and running. Historically, impact investments have been basically restricted for the privileged in a way, mm-hmm. Because many of them have been alternative investment funds that are not accessible for private individual investors, mm-hmm. and I think that's. For impact investing, this is not ideal, and it's also not ideal to achieve the goals, because in the end you want to have a broad investor base, you want to have everyone participating in achieving the Sustainable Development Goals, and so that fund is in our view also somewhat a contribution to democratizing impact investing and making it really broadly accessible.
Fantastic. So if I ask you what your biggest kind of hurdles have been kind of facing to grow impact investing, that would have been one until now?
That is one, yeah, certainly, I would say, until now for private individuals. At the same time, what has been a challenge for all the years they have been in impact investing now is really investor education. Some markets are more advanced than others, but overall, I would say impact investing is now slowly reaching mainstream. Mm-hmm. But it has really taken a very long time, and there is still a lot of work to be done. And that's also why I think it's a great initiative that you do to really bring out the message, share it with a wider audience, also the millennials who might not read the books and research, but might be much more appealed to a podcast. And congratulations, it's really fantastic. Yeah.
Or anyone that goes to the gym and or runs, you know, they tend to like it. But then going back to this example of the UCITS fund, so would you? I always like also this is about relating, you know, to other companies out there or other funds that want to set up things. So would that be your recommendation around kind of an easier way to set something up in your experience so far? I would say.
Yeah, it's.
To democratize it, right?
I think the UCITS framework is a great framework to democratize impact investing. The challenge with the UCITS framework is it has very strict requirements. You need to be regulated by financial regulator. You need to have a very strong infrastructure in place in order to launch and manage a UCITS fund. So for smaller investment managers, it might be quite challenging to have a UCITS offering on their shelf. And therefore, there's pros and cons. The big pro is certainly that it's accessible for retail investor. The downside is it's very
cumbersome.
More intense in the management.
Okay. And then again, we are kind of getting a bit more technical, but and that is it's a Lux base or mm-hmm. it's the fund.
Correct. Yeah. All our funds are Luxembourg investment vehicles.
So what would it take, you think, to convince kind of let's say, I like the word, all fund managers, right, or asset owners to embrace impact investing?
So education, I believe, is absolutely key, and I think what's the message that needs to be maybe more consistently communicated as well is on the financial features of impact investing. Because I believe there is still the belief out there that you give up financial return in order to do impact investments. And we have to prove now for 20 years that this is absolutely not the case. So you don't have to give up anything on the financial side. In my view, Microfinance is a great example, has delivered very consistent, attractive returns for 20 years, highly uncorrelated returns as well. So really, for a professional portfolio manager, it's a fantastic addition to the portfolio. Spreads have remained remarkably stable over all these years through financial crisis, etc. So all the scenarios, Microfinance has proven to be extremely resilient. And in my view, it's also risky not investing in impact investing, in a sense that if you don't invest in impact investing, you might have an overexposure to traditional business models, traditional technologies, and you're kind of overexposed to them. And impact investing really offers investors the opportunity and the access to new markets, new segments, new technologies, new business models. And in my view, if you want to have an efficient portfolio, a highly resilient portfolio, you should include impact investing just from a pure diversification point of view.
I like that very much, because, you know, as I speak with more and more kind of investment managers and different investment funds, hedge funds and different types, you know, that are trying to look into, again, I talk about sustainable and impact investing, yeah, because they're kind of going through it. And I like the podcast because it reiterates the kind of this, and a previous podcast we talk about the 50 Shades of Green and understanding that you can use this as part of your strategy. to, you know, again generate alpha as they try, or and you know, kind of improve performance and protect, you know, your performance going forward as well, which is very interesting, because it's what everyone's trying to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Is there any other kind of biggest lessons that you have had through the period of, you know, what is it now, 7 years, give or take, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That you've been with the firm, or even, you know, beyond counting everything you have done so far?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe life is a lot about learning, and the faster you learn, the better. And I think if you have a failure, always take it as an opportunity to learn from it and improve. It's always, of course, in hindsight, you're always smarter, you could have things better, faster. I believe overall, Blue Orchard, the team we have at Blue Orchard, it's really outstanding, and all of them they do a fantastic job, and it's really an honor and privilege to work with such outstanding individuals. At the personal level, I would have loved to learn earlier about impact investing. And nowadays, it's in many universities, you have it as a part of the curriculum. At my time at university, no one was speaking about impact investing. You know? And that has also changed, but it took some time. Yeah.
I wasn't going to say anything about this, but now I'm going to say it. Actually, Patrick looks really, really young. So I don't know how much younger he would have liked to learn about this. Because I think he's done great already. And I think that you, by all means, are part of a very unfortunately until now, but I think it's growing, selective group of people that are making a difference. So the intention of doing something different then it would have been to try to learn sooner.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. And I'm 38 years old now. And maybe I look a bit younger, so I believe I have to thank my parents for passing on some some good genes. Yeah.
Oh, but again, you know, 38, you know, well, it's all about, you know, relative and perspectives, right? But 38 and having been the CEO of this, you know, great organization for many years already, and we'll touch on, you know, the major event that you were part of as well, you know, with the organization, you know, on the history of it. So I think it's, you know, congratulations and kudos, you know.
Thanks very much. Goes all to the team as well.
Yes,
Blue Orchard.
Yes. I didn't ask you before, but how many people do you have in the team?
101.
Wow, fascinating, right? So it's not. It doesn't. Sometimes takes. You know. I like the perspective of the numbers, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't have a, you know, thousands of people team. You know, like some major organizations, right? Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, we also try to be lean and effective, and really bring the money to achieve its goals, and not being lost in inefficiencies in the end.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to move a little bit and link in, you know, as well to everything you've been talking about so far. So which is the area I call it identifying and measuring impact. I think you call it impact management, you know, on your website. And you have, I think it's called Spirit, which is the Blue Orchard's proprietary impact management tool. I'm happy to kind of share some of these key points about. Actually, let me share this, because it says, you know, as a pioneer in the kind of evolving and growing field of impact investing, Blue Orchard has established itself as an organization that not only follows best practices in impact management, but also creates them. And Spirit assesses key areas of social and environmental impact, aligned with industry standards such as the International Finance Corporation IFC Operating Principles for Impact Management. Inverted quotes, the principles, and the universal standards on social performance management. And obviously you have used this in many ways for your company and for the industry, but please share with us a bit more about Spirit and, you know, mm-hmm. how it was created, how it works,
So to some extent it goes back to what I mentioned in the very beginning, that for Blue Orchard it's absolutely key to combine both worlds, the financial features but also the impact features. And it's I think on the financial side there's a lot of best practices on how to perform a due diligence and etc. On the impact side, social, environmental impact, when Blue Orchard was launched in particular, there has nothing been out there. And so Blue Orchard had to develop, and that was even before my time, that the first version of Spirit went live, had to develop a tool on how do you assess a company in terms of its social and or environmental contribution. And this is basically what Spirit in the end assesses. From a due diligence perspective, it would give you an answer: is this a good business in terms of social and or environmental impact? And of course, we do the financial due diligence. We look at the governance of a company, the financial statements, and that is one part of it. But for us, it has always been very important to be as rigorous on the impact side as we are on the financial side. And it's really a hands-on tool in the end that is applied by our impact team to assess these companies. We look at details, but important details. So, for example, on the microfinance side, and here maybe in brackets, the Spirit is different for different investee types of companies and for different asset classes. So it's not that one size fits all. But let's take the example of microfinance, where we, for example, look at how is a microcredit explained to a micro entrepreneur. Is it just a contract that is handed over? Is it a personal meeting? Is it supported with illustrations? And the reason why we look at that is that we have found that still a large portion of the population in developing countries, they cannot read or write. So if you just hand them out a 10 pages contract, Times New Roman, font size 8, they will not understand it, and they will just sign something which they don't know what it is about. And so we put the strong emphasis on how these products are explained, ideally in a personal meeting, supported with illustrations that people can take home, discuss with their family, also maybe more than one meeting, so that people really get a bit of sense of the products as well. So that is one thing that that we look at.
And does that get kind of loaded into the system on a description basis? Like, I'm trying to imagine a picture. So you have to like put it on a text, open text, right?
So we overall we look at 50 data points on the microfinance side. This is all uploaded into our system. So in that sense, we are highly digitalized. And the outcome of the assessment is we call it a Spirit score, which is a rating on the impact side that gives us an indication how impactful is that business. And that is all in our system. We then cluster the 50 data points into seven dimensions, and we report on the seven dimensions also to our investors, and they can see what is the profile of a particular investee along these seven dimensions. And client protection is a very important dimension, but it's also how does the institution deal with the environment, it's how they treat the employees. So there's a number of more dimensions that we look at, and we are totally transparent with our investors how an individual company looks like in terms of their impact profile.
And can you then translate this into effectively performance or the effect on the returns that it will have?
It's
soft, you know, and qualitative.
It's highly quantitative, but it's quantitative on the impact side. And we have very strict requirements. So there is a minimum score of 50, for example, that we require in order to invest in a business. So if it doesn't achieve the minimum score, we would never invest. And once it has achieved the minimum score, we also track the score over time. We help the companies to improve, very often also through the technical assistance capital that we have, where we can really then actively work with the business, not only improve their operations and the financial part of the business, but really also to help them to become more impactful in a positive way.
And one last question on this area. When investors come to you, how much, you know, do they, in terms of, let's say, a weighting, do they actually ask you for this in terms of, you know, the impact measurement, the impact management, or is it just simply, you know, looking at the basics of the returns and then they give you the funds?
It becomes more and more important. I think the financial features are a driver of impact investing because it's attractive as an investment, but at the same time also people, they don't only want to know what returns are achieved, but also how they are achieved. And the how is the impact part to some extent, which gives people a very rigorously assessed a set of information on how returns are achieved. And every year that the number of investors asking for detailed impact reports basically increases.
And out of curiosity, is there one or two major investors that have always been there for you that are kind of publicly available that you can mention? Or
the certainly a number of development banks, KfW, IFC, they have been partners for many years. So we have worked with them on different topics, different asset classes, always on the forefront of impact investing, and very fruitful collaborations really pushed the frontiers as well in impact investing. And we are very, very proud of these partnerships and really appreciate it.
Well, thank you to them. So now moving into like the future, right? And maybe at this point I mentioned kind of in view of the recent acquisition, you know, by Schroders as one of the major events. How does it change the vision and the strategy for Blue Orchard, and what does this mean?
Mm-hmm. So what is absolutely important in impact investing is to reach the mainstream investors and to achieve scale. If we want to successfully achieve the millennium or now the social development goals, if we want to mitigate and fight climate change and stay below 2 degrees Celsius in temperature increase, we are talking about trillions of US dollars in capital that are required to go into impact investing. And maybe Blue Orchard could have a significant contribution to that on a standalone basis, and maybe over 20 years we could reach a size that would have in the end really large scale impacts. But at the same time, we believe we don't have 20 years. Yes. We really need to accelerate the allocations into impact investing, and therefore we are really excited about the partnership with Schroders. We believe they are a perfect match to us. They have on the cultural side very long heritage, seventh generation, still family owned. At the same time, the transparency of a listed company, substantial commitment to sustainability. It's an organization with fantastic people working every day really, really hard to contribute, and they are of course with 200 years history very established, have a great global network, and they can help Blue Orchard really bringing impact investing to the mainstream and scale it up and help ourselves, I mean all of us, to really accelerate the impact journey to achieve the sustainable development goals and fight climate change.
And it's interesting because now there is an article around September in the Financial Times that says Schroders deal opens the way for more M&A in impact investing. because I was going to ask you, what can other investment managers, you know, do to become sustainable and impact investors, or other financial institutions, right, which would be the way to really make a mainstream and to follow suit and follow example of Schroeder's. And then also there's another one on the Telegraph, which in October, which says how impact investing shows capitalism and environmentalism are not incompatible. And then they mention you again, the acquisition, and also Goldman Sachs launch of their, you know, green finance department, right? But how many blue orchards are there to go and buy, right? That's the first question I had in my mind. And they said, like, because, you know, you read the articles and they say, well, yeah, M&A could be the go forward, the way forward. But then I was thinking, well, really? So how do we, going back to all of this, how do we really scale?
Yeah, it's a great question. And in the end, for a large financial institution, it's a question of make or buy, I believe. And as you rightfully say, there's not so many players out there like Blue Orchard. It's a fairly limited market in the end, and there is a reason for that. And one of the main reasons is it's really, really difficult to set up a successful impact investing business. Blue Orchard as a pioneer really paved the way also for a lot of other companies that followed later. But 20 years ago, setting up a microfinance business, traveling in the most remote areas of the world to do an investment there, building the teams in these markets, the infrastructure, the network, it takes many years to build something like that.
And you had a great backer as well, to start with, at least.
Right? And we had a great backer, right? And if you don't have that, it's even more difficult. And so I would say for a large financial institution, setting up something like that, it will probably take several years, success is not guaranteed. And so the buy option might be much more attractive, but as you said, there's not so many players out there who fit into such a profile.
So, would you agree to say that basically they just need to try to build something as soon as possible and kind of learn as much and as quickly as possible by, you know, perhaps collaborating or talking to companies like yours?
Overall, I would say partnerships are maybe the most effective way of having really a win-win-win situation, where the larger financial institutions can have a win, where the impact investment manager can have a win, and most importantly, where we as a society have a win on achieving the sustainable development goals and fighting climate change.
Okay, that's why it was a triple win, win-win-win. I haven't heard that one before. Very nice. As we're coming to the end of the interview and of the podcast episode, I wanted to just briefly talk or ask you about yourself, you know, if you don't mind. So I mentioned before, you know, we mentioned a little bit where you came from, you know, the different roles that you have had. I was just wondering how did you evolve to be doing what you're doing today, or was there a turning point? You said that you wish you learned early about impact investing. You know, what actually made you, you know, become?
Well, the turning point in that sense was really learning about microfinance at that time, and when I saw it for the first time, I really thought, wow, that's the greatest thing in the world, right? It's still investments, so you have something that at that time I was working at the bank, you have something that you could offer your clients, and at the same time, it's really impact investing was not really coined as a term, but it's really something which is contributing in a meaningful way to solving a problem, and the combination of these two elements, I immediately thought, wow, that's a fantastic thing, and I wanna engage in that.
How long ago
that.
Was that?
Years now, yeah, nine. I would say. Yeah.
Was that when you were at
Fontobel at that time?
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. And is there any kind of person or book or anything in particular as well that inspire you? That sometimes it's good, you know, to either give credit or, you know, to share with other listeners.
On impact investing, there have not been so many books around, I think the biography maybe of Muhammad Yunus could be of interest. But since there have not been so many books, we also the Blue Orchard team, together with Peter Franconi, our chairman, myself, we have written a book called "Small Money, Big Impact," exactly with the ambition to contribute, to educate, to really answer questions that people have about impact investing in a understandable way.
And I meant to mention before as well, I recommend people to check the Blue Orchard Impact Management Reports, which are, you know, quite something. And I also meant to mention before the UN report, which was published this week, around especially the 2 degrees and the rise of the water levels, right? But by all means, yeah. Or is it your book, which I saw you, there is a couple of videos as well where you highlight and show it, and it's called again
Small Money
Big Impact.
Yeah. Maybe we should do a podcast.
Yeah. Like a whole series. Yeah, I like that. Two last questions. So one is, you know, you've, you know, meet a lot of different people at all levels, right, because of the work that you do. What have you noticed that makes, you know, a great leader?
On that, we could also have a series of podcasts with people who are maybe even greater leaders than certainly I am. But what I would say is that, and that's also what I try at Blue Orchard, is really to create an environment where people can deploy their talents. And can really realize their full potential, and that's in the end, I think it's about creating a culture, creating an environment where that can happen.
And one last call to action for our listeners.
What I would encourage everyone is, I think there is a lot of sustainable products out there nowadays. First of all, certainly always make sure it's not just greenwashing or impact washing, but it's really really delivering a positive, meaningful impact. But at the same time, I would also like to encourage everyone, if you have a great impact investing product in front of you, look at it for once just from a financial perspective. And I'm pretty sure if it's a good product, you will be convinced by the financial features of the investment.
Fantastic. And if people want to get in touch with you or Blue Orchard, the best way?
Go to our website, go to our LinkedIn profile, follow us on Twitter, send me an email, send me an invite on LinkedIn. I will be pleased to be in touch with your audience.
Thank you so much for your time, Patrick.
Thank you, JP.
It is a bye for now, and until our next episode of Impact Leaders, God bless you all. Please remember to check our partners' websites for upcoming events. Thank you.
Thank you.
This was Impact Leaders. Impact Leaders is brought to you by Fast Forward 2030 and Real Changers. Visit fastforward2030.com to learn how to include the global goals into your business models, and realchangers.com to find talent and careers with impact.